Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We've brought the show to the Capitol Building and Pier as South Dakota kicks off the newest legislative session. And we have Senate Minority Leader Troy Hinert and House Minority Leader Jamie Smith ahead before we close the show. But with me right now around the table, Assistant Senate Majority Leader Jim Bolin and Speaker of the House Stephen Haugard. Speaker Haugard, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Senator Bolin, thanks for being here as well.
Same thing. Glad to be here.
Usually I see you in a different office, so here we are in Pier.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Let's start with you, Speaker. And as you reconvene and think about legislative priorities for Republican leadership, where do you begin? How much preparation has already gone into gathering together this week?
Well, where we begin is not just as a Republican caucus, but as a House body. So we want to draw everybody together, and I think our issues are probably going to be much the same. You know, obviously, the things of the state need attention, regardless of what stripe you are, but issues in regard to the nursing home discussion that's been mentioned here before we got on the air, and then obviously meth issues, corrections issues, incarceration rates. Personally, for me, the Native American issues, I think, are important, as well as my kind of pet project was in regard to border mental illness issues, combining that along with chemical dependency and alcohol issues. So there's an involuntary commitment process that needs attention, and I think we can give that attention this session, and I think it'll probably be a bipartisan type of thing. It's really affects the state generally, so hope we can move that forward.
So I had this moment where I get a little overwhelmed with all the topics that are coming up and everything that needs to happen. And maybe I'm the only one who every once in a while says there's so much to be done. But from a leadership perspective, when there is so much to be done and you have, you know, so many different lawmakers with different ideas, how do you sort of, you know, keep things moving in a direction that's the most effective for the short period of time that you have?
Well, the great thing about our state is that every bill gets a hearing, and there are many states where that's not true. The committee chairs can leave them in the drawer and never see them again. And in our situation, we make sure we review every bill and give it a fair hearing and dispose of it that way. It either goes to the floor or it goes back for some additional work. But that's the benefit that we have, and I hope to enhance that process. I hope to engage each of the committees more significantly with the policy issues that face the state. So, for example, I was on Health and Human Services for a few years and Judiciary for a few years. And in Health and Human Services, typically we would just review the bills that come up. Now, they might be agency bills, they might be individuals that bring a bill, but we'd review those and you'd move on. What I hope to see happen with all the committees is that they become much more engaged in the process as far as the budget and long-term policies. You know, the legislature should be much the same as the governor's office, where we have an agenda as well that we can join together and drive it forward and drive it forward for the benefit of the people of the state.
Yeah. Senator Bolin, some of the priorities that you see upcoming.
Well, I think the governor started off by talking about broadband and using that as a tool for economic development, especially not only just in rural areas, but in some of the cities. You know, she talked about Watertown, Huron, some of these places still have some issues for that. So I think that's a key priority issue. And then the civics education, which got a kind of a standing ovation yesterday. I know there are a number of bills that are circulating, some predated Kristi Noem winning even the primary election. I'm going to bring a bill that will essentially take the civics class, which is now an elective in almost every school in South Dakota, and make that a requirement.
So let me ask you about that, because I was talking with my daughter last night, and I took civics when I went to high school. It was a civics class, and she takes U.S. government and history, but she knew more about you know, how the government works than a whole lot of people. So help me understand why it has to be a civics class, or is it something that some schools already have? Parse that out a little bit, if you would.
Some of that's true in some cases. Civics has been a class that I think has been shunted aside a little bit in the rush for STEM and STEAM, you know, add arts to STEM and science, technology. And in most classes, most schools in South Dakota have civics as an elective. My idea is that we should make this a requirement. And the governor talked, you know, she mentioned that she wants everybody to be able to pass this citizenship test. Well, if if students are going to be required to do that to graduate from high school, we're going to have to put a greater emphasis on teaching civics in school and about the government and about our history and about how things work. Because the last thing we want is a situation where we have a third of our high school students can't graduate from high school because they can't pass a citizenship test. So we have to put an emphasis on improving our civic education so that people just understand a little bit more about the structure, the pattern of government, how government works, how the whole process works, so that they will have a better sense of trust in government. And she emphasized that yesterday as well, that we have a lot of young people who are perhaps losing faith in governmental systems, perhaps others as well. And I think the other thing that we want to emphasize in this is transparency, and she has made a big pledge for that as well. But the civics education, if you're going to require students to pass the citizenship test, and I think there's probably, I haven't seen a bill on that, but I'm sure one will be dropped, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be passed. I think there's a very, very good chance that's going to be passed. Well, if that's passed, and I tentatively would probably be supportive of that or something very similar to that, then you're going to have to increase your knowledge base and your emphasis on that in the school system, especially in your high school years, so that students can have a legitimate chance of passing.
Does it replace the requirement for U.S. government?
No, I don't think so. No, I think this is adding to that, okay. Putting a greater emphasis on that.
And Governor Noem was with us earlier, you know, in this show, and she talked about it varying throughout schools. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
Oh,
to
yeah,
find
absolutely.
Out who's
absolutely.
Doing what? But I can, in my school, that seems, in my daughter's school, it seems like that would be a duplication of what she's already learning. But I don't have an awareness of what's happening in every, you know, every parent thinks they know what's happening in the school district if they have a kid who happens to be in that class right now.
it's going to have to be sorted out over the term of this legislative session. But I think in many schools in South Dakota, civics has become an elective rather than a requirement. And I think we want to make sure that it is effectively taught and communicated some really basic knowledge about government so that students understand what's going on. The other thing I was really interested in was her emphasis on habitat, making sure that not only just for pheasant hunting, but that we preserve habitat across the state. I know a lot of it's been, with the decline in the CRP program over the years, we've had a reduction in just our natural habitat. I mean, we're farming the land, it's being used, but the ability to provide habitat for all sorts of wild animals, different aspects of life like that, I think that's important. And her rural background makes that an emphasis, and we're going to see how that works out. But that was one of the more interesting parts of the speech that I'd never heard before in any speech like this before.
Speaker Haugard, you mentioned tribal relations, and we had Secretary of Tribal Relations David Flute on the program earlier as well. You and I spoke in Sioux Falls during the campaign season about some of your, desires to see that move forward in a new way. Talk a little bit, expand on your thoughts on and tribal relations and how Secretary Flute, that partnership might improve, might grow, might, how do you see it?
Well, over the course of the summer, I've had an opportunity to visit with some tribal leaders. I came out here to Pier to do a presentation when they were considering the upcoming session. They wanted to know a little bit more about how it works, so I spent the day out here doing that, just to meet with as many tribal leaders as were available. And that's one of the things, I think, just to break down that barrier of how do you get past the Pier facade that you need to get through so you can actually get something done. And I think most tribal leaders, they really want to see improvements as much as possible as where they can, and they want to be effective. No one wants to feel like they haven't really served well. And so I think that's the common ground that we have. It's just a matter of then seeing what works best. And I think some of the tribes in South Dakota have done some innovative things as far as sharing resources with the state. And I think that's a real step forward to just get that much going and to realize that we're all on the same page. We want to improve the lives of people, and especially with the Native population, to give opportunities for employment. And then I think some additional social services type of things that need attention And I think that they're, for the most part, willing to do that and looking for ways to do it. A lot of it is just a matter of developing good relationships with people that share the goal, and then we can brainstorm and come up with solutions.
As we await Governor Noem's budget, we've seen Governor Dugard's proposed budget. We have not seen Governor Noem's proposed budget. Appropriations Committee is beginning to meet for the, for the legislative body. Talk a little bit about sort of, if you will, Senator Bolin, about the money and the priorities and the funding. And is this a time of really leaning into the work and parsing things out? Do you have to wait? How does this sort of work as we await some of her priorities? Are they your priorities from a budgetary standpoint?
Well, I think the I think the deadline for her to present her budget is, I believe, January 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. And we'll be, there'll be a lot of tentative work done by the Appropriations Committee until that time, and then we'll see where her priorities are. She talked a lot about public-private partnerships, recruiting, getting some private funding for some of these things. My understanding of the budget, and I'm not on appropriations, is that for us to meet our obligations for a 2.3% increase for schools and a 2.3% increase for state workers and a similar increase for our Medicaid providers is going to take most of the anticipated resources. Now, we don't know exactly how much money is going to be coming in that we anticipate from the online sales tax. The Governor Dugard did not include that in his budget. So there may be, and I emphasize maybe, some extra resources there. But we just aren't 100% sure on that. So up until the 23rd, I think the legislature will be doing its work, will be evaluating a number of bills. But as far as figuring out exactly where our resources for money is going to be concerned, we're probably going to have to wait until that time to get a good handle on things.
What about some of the things that came out of the mental health study opportunities with continuing some of those committees? Senator Deb Solholt joined us on the program and broke down, here's what she, the committee felt, the work that still needed to be done and the money that would have to, to continue to study that. Does that move forward? Is that in limbo? How does that work?
As far as its actual funding, I'd say yes, it's a little bit in limbo. A number of the other policy proposals that were not necessarily going to require a vote for funding, those will probably just be held in abeyance for a little bit of time. But we're meeting this year. One thing I'm really glad we did this year, we're meeting for a full 40 days this year with a new administration, rather than for the last 5 or 6 years, we've only met for 38 days. We didn't feel we needed those extra days. This year, because of our need, because we knew this situation was going to happen, we have 2 extra days that we haven't used in the past, and I believe those will help us as we take this process forward. Because this, when you have the same governor for 8 years, a lot of your personnel don't change, and you kind of get a feeling of what they're going to be funding and what they're going to work for. This year we don't have that. And so I think we made a good decision last year in giving ourselves an extra 2 days to work through some of these proposals with a new governor.
Mm-hmm. Speaker Haugert, any final thoughts on what South Dakota listeners right now, what voters, what citizens of the state should be really watching and have their ears open for this session?
Well, I think just to be aware of the fact that the governor chose not to belabor all of her intentions. And so she didn't cover some things that normally she probably would have in a longer conversation, and that was just her courtesy to everyone else, I think. And everyone will hear what's going on as far as her thoughts and intentions, and she was talking about having more listening meetings and that sort of thing, so I think that's great. I think from the legislative standpoint, it's important for the public to know we likewise have goals and agendas that we want to carry out, and I think most of those are going to be consistent with what the governor has in mind. We might find things that we don't necessarily agree on, but we can sort those out and come to conclusions there. I very much appreciate the governor's current transition staff as far as their interest in trying to make sure questions get answered and things are done timely and effectively. So that's been good. So I'm looking forward to working with her. I think she's, like I say, shares many of the same goals and ambitions, so that's a good thing. I was going to mention, when you were talking about education, that our state constitution, I believe the correct words are as follows. It's in Article 3, first paragraph, and or Article 8, Section 3, I think it is. It says the stability of a republican form of government, depending upon the morality and intelligence of the people, requires that there be a standard of education that's uniform. And I think that with the civics discussion, the idea that what we're trying to maintain through public education is a stable form of government, and that does require citizens to be on the same page as far as what this is all about. Not a democracy, which is oftentimes what we talk about, and it's not a pure democracy, it's a republic and a representative republic. So I hope the public comes to understand that more clearly, and I think that's going to be a good conversation that comes out of these bills that come forward.
I like that, and let's expand on that a little bit, because one of the things when Governor Noem was here, we talked about that and the fact that with that that civics education become, you're also creating more engaged voters, and she's also been supportive of a free press with the Reporter Shield law. Increasing this notion of what exactly is a democracy, what are our responsibilities. And then opening the door to have more voters directly contact her office. These are the places online. This is how we want our staff to use YouTube and Facebook and these different things. How does that work from a legislative standpoint, in the sense that a lot of this is going to come through you, but yet the governor's going to hear from individual people? So talk a little bit about the sort of engaging the voters of South Dakota to be part of these conversations. You want your phone to ring.
It oftentimes does, and you get. I'm already getting emails on particular proposals, bills that have been filed, and those type of things. So, and we also, I'm in the grocery store on the weekend. I'm in the hardware store. I'm going this place. I'm at my local church. Things like that. So, people have quite a bit of contact with us, and we also conduct public meetings at various times during the legislative session on the weekend. I think most legislators are pretty accessible to the general public if they want to contact us. Now, that doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to agree with them on every issue that people bring forward, but South Dakota clearly has a citizen legislature that is accessible to the people, and I get a lot of emails from, I live right close to the Iowa border, but I get a lot of emails from the Black Hills people saying, well, we'd like you to vote for this or vote for that, So I think we are accessible to the public in a very unique way that's perhaps different than a lot of other states, and it's clearly different than the three people we send back to Washington, D.C., who are geographically a long ways away a lot of the time, and they aren't hiding, but they're just, when they come back here, but there's just so many more people and so many more miles to cover that the public doesn't get a chance, doesn't have as much exposure to them on a regular basis. That's what I would say.
Another thing that Governor and I talked about was this notion of trust and transparency, because that was a big part of her campaign, and how that will be implemented. And it's an opportunity to rebuild trust that people feel has been lost. So as lawmakers, as legislators, how do you see that opportunity to increase transparency and rebuild the relationship as people reach out, but then also rebuild the trust in state government that over the years, frankly, has eroded some? Speaker Howard.
Well, what I intend to do with that is I'm trying to put together right now, I've got one of the interns working on it in particular, to put together an outline bullet point presentation of what we do. And I think a lot of it is when people know you, then they say, well, I trust you. I might not trust the other people out there because I don't know them. But part of it is just getting out in the public. And I hope I can encourage each one of the legislators in the House to get out in their public schools, do presentations, have more community meetings, and just simply say, hey, here's what we do on a regular basis. And don't be misled by ill-defined allegations of wrongdoing. But just come and meet us, talk to us, and we'll tell you what we're doing and why it's important. And that's part of this representative republic. If we want a democracy right now with the internet, we can just go online and vote on everything, and we can just all stay home. Or we can continue with what does work, which is a representative republic. The democracy part is where you go and vote for your representative. And that's where the democracy kind of settles down and the representative republic comes into play. And so the representatives then can debate the issues and talk about things, take their cues from their constituents and so on. But that's what we hope to do, is have the legislators do a little more education in their districts.
We could have a whole conversation on the hallmarks of a good democracy.
Yeah,
and what
it's
that
a
means.
Great issue.
We'll let you get back to work. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to you both a lot in the future, Senator Jim Bolin and Speaker Steve Haugard. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the invitation.